Of course, you're listening to WRPI Troy, the Upstate Underground. And we're going to start the day off with Shahram Sheba. He is a Rumi scholar, author, and translator. And the last time, you may remember, Shahram was on, he talked about soul evolution. It was a great talk on that. And this is a continuation of that. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Shahram Sheba is a performance poet, award-winning translator, and scholar of Rumi, and author of several books. He is known for his rich and entrancing concerts of Rumi, the 13th century Persian mystic poet. Sheba was born to a Persian Jewish family in Iran and migrated to the U.S. at the age of 16. He is the only major presenter in the West who performs Rumi's poetry in his own English renditions, as well as the original Persian verses. In his events, Rumi is celebrated with Sheba's unique and passionate recitations of the timeless poetry performed with musical groups of various genres. Shahram Sheba is a pro-democracy secularist who believes in the human potential for unlimited growth. Since 1988, Shahram Sheba has translated several hundred of Rumi's poems collected in four books and continues to translate and perform his work on an ongoing basis. Sheba's access to the original of these exquisite poems forms the basis for his memorable performances and supports his reputation as the passionate performer-translator of Rumi in the world today. On today's In the Spirit, as I mentioned earlier, we will continue with our conversation on the topic of soul evolution. Shahram is on tour and is offering special events. We'll be talking about that too. For more information, you can visit rumi.net, rumi.net. And also, at certain portion of the program, we will invite you to, if you have any questions for Shahram, to call in. And he will discuss them with you. I can give you right now the phone number if you want to put it on a piece of paper for later. It's 518-276-6248. I'll give it to you again later. It's my great pleasure to bring to you as a guest on this hour of In the Spirit, Shahram Sheba. Hello, Shahram.
Hi, Gary. Hi. Thank you so much for that intro.
Yes, yes. I'm so happy you're with us. And you've got some big event coming up in New York City. First and foremost, why don't you tell our listeners what that is about?
Thank you. You know, New York City is, without doubt, the best place to visit during the holidays.
Yes.
I could very safely say anywhere in the world it's probably the best place in the world to visit during the holidays. There's so much festivities, there's so much music, there's so much holiday related. Just the holiday Christmas lights and the Hanukkah lights and that are out there are absolutely amazing. So I have the privilege of doing an annual New York City Manhattan Holiday Rumi event at the New York Open Center, and which is a long established holistic center in Manhattan. They've been around for about 26-27 years, and this is my 17th annual event with them.
Great.
So I have a long time connection. This is what's so nice about this is that and I like to, share that with your listeners. If you're within a traveling distance or driving distance of New York City, the event is tomorrow night, Friday, December 10th at 8 p.m. And the New York Open Center is on 30th Street. So make a day of it, or make it a weekend if you can spare the time and just come and not only join me for the Rumi performance plus a whirling workshop that I do, but also, come and visit the city and see the city during this truly magical time.
And, of course, many of our listeners reside in the city anyway, so that's great, too. So let them know that you don't have to travel very far if you live in and around New York. And I agree with you, Shahram. It's a wonderful place to be, and it's the city of lights. It's like our Paris,
Yeah, no, it is true. New York has its challenges. I practically grew up here. I came to the U.S. as you mentioned, at the age of 16. Although I've traveled a lot of places, but New York has always been my base. And no matter where I am, whether I was in Europe a couple of times recently and West Coast and so forth. When I come to New York, it doesn't make me feel like In a lesser place, it's the experience of being here. It's quite unusual, I must say, because it has its challenges, and it's a very expensive city to be in. But it kind of spoils you for other cities, unless you want to live in the country and so forth.
Yeah, the word that comes to mind is vital and alive.
Yeah, it's very vital and very alive. Tomorrow night, if I may add one more to it, this is a rather large stage performance for me for tomorrow night at the Open Center. I'm going to have three amazing musicians with me, and this trio is my favorite group to perform with. I call them my New York City trio, and I love to be able to travel with this trio and go to other venues, and it's not always possible. But there is tomorrow night at the Open Center, I'm going to have my longtime collaborator, who's an amazing flute player, who actually will play probably five or six different flutes and harmonica and conch shell, so for tomorrow night. His name is John Ragusa. And he's a recording artist, has several CDs. On piano will be Rob Sylvan, also a great pianist and a recording artist. And on percussion is Alex Alexander. So I very much look forward to tomorrow night's performance.
Yeah, I'm familiar with all of them, and boy, they are great.
Yeah, and I have a bit of a announcement to make here, and that is that I have managed to book my trio to come with me to Kripalu at my next event.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. It's quite an undertaking, because it's to have these groups travel and so forth is not the most efficient way to do for Kripalu and so forth, but we're going to do it because this group just is amazing.
What date you have for that?
That will be February 26th, which is a Saturday night.
Well, I'll be there.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other conversation. I definitely want you there. I definitely want to ask you and invite you to MC the event, have done before quite beautifully in the past.
Well, it'll be an honor for me to do that, and that's going right in my book, and nothing taking its place. So thank you for that heads up, Sharam.
Thank you.
Yeah, I discovered with you, and you've been on the program a number of times, and we've always enjoyed your music, etc. But what I'm coming to really appreciate more and more about you is your depth, your thinking, your exploration and consciousness.
Thank you.
And I really got that last time you were on, and when you were speaking on soul evolution. And to me, I love having conversations about that.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very stimulating, and it's very deep, and it helps us, because we fall into stasis often. We fall into a kind of lethargy. If we don't get that kind of, if we don't get stimulation, our patterns overtake us. You know what I mean? It becomes that heaviness. We need to. Maybe I'm starting this conversation. I don't know.
No, it's fine. No. Please go ahead.
Yeah. The sense is that with a stimulating conversation like the one that we're to receive from you on this hour, it helps us, and it helped me the last time you were on. It shook myself up a little bit, which was good, because I, along with other people, we all living today, because of the world the way it is, we'll have a tendency to fall back on a familiar territory, which stops us from growing. And if you really need to grow, you need to have challenging thoughts, challenging ideas, challenge your own beliefs, wake up. The whole thing is to be awake, not just going through the motions of being awake,
Yeah, this is yes, what you say is exactly correct. And one of the reasons that I'm here is to be able to shake things up for people spiritually, because the religious and spiritual world is the biggest trap for the spirit. And by trap, I mean they are one of the biggest challenges to growth, especially religion, because religion offers you a packaged experience, and they don't make sense. There is about 5% of truth in religion, is what I like to say, because they do introduce the concept of a divine soul, but then they stop there, and everything from that point on becomes quite kind of negative and counter evolutionary. And then people go into spirituality, they leave their birth religions, then they go into spirituality thinking that, okay, we are finally fighting dogma, we are finally overcoming dogma and moving beyond dogma, and then they realize that spirituality, they may not realize it, but I'd like to tell them that spirituality is also filled with dogma. It's dogma filled. So they may replace Jesus with a Krishna, or they may replace Adonai with Vishnu, or they may replace, Ali with Shiva and so forth, or Buddha. And what they don't realize is that these are all the same traps. You cannot escape the slavery concept as long as you're worshiping deities. We need to stop that. We have gone way beyond. We are evolved to a point we were ready for this, during the time of Rumi, but people don't want to listen. We are now ready. We have evolved to a point as species. Those of us who are aware of this, obviously, most of the population are still in the automaton stages where they just do what they are told and follow what they are told. But those of us who are awakened, those of us who are in yoga, those of us who have awareness of who we are, we need to just take lesson that stop the mentality, the thought process of being a slave. We are no longer slaves. And how do we do that? Stop worshiping deities. It's no longer necessary, especially deities. You have no clue who they are just because somebody told you to do it. It's very interesting. It's fantastic that yoga has become mainstream, but with it is now this concept of selling, Ganesh and Krishna and all that stuff. This is like me wanting to learn boxing, and then somebody tells me that you have to become a Muslim to box, you have to worship Allah to box. It's the silliness of it. It's staggering. And yet people do it on a daily basis, and they just close their minds and just do it. It's one thing if you're aware of who you are, if your core is intact, and you want to explore. But when you give your core away, that's where the problem is.
I agree, because we have to see. A lot of people, may have issues to deal with in their life that they really need to deal with psychologically. And they escape from that instead of dealing with understanding themselves a little bit more. They'll throw themselves into a package that's presented.
Yes.
And that package will take the place of the self-work that they really need to do on themselves to understand their own issues, what they need, because I believe that self-growth is opening yourself up to who you are.
Yes.
You can find God right where you are. You don't even have to call it a name.
Yes, this is exactly true. And it's called self-realization. It's not called your neighbor's realization or, your deity's realization. It's called self-realization for a reason. And yes, it is true that the world of spirituality does attract people in need of a quick fix, but this has always been related to aspects of religion and spirituality. The whole concept, religion is basically a snake oil product.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very effective in mind control and in group control, because we have been pre-programmed to respond to certain terms such as God, such as worship, and such as good and bad and all that thing. Basically, crime and punishment, carrot and stick, meaning that we are rewarded if we do something good and then we are punished if we do something wrong. And religion takes advantage of all these things that we are pre-wired to respond to. And to think about religion, that it makes such a good method of mind control and of group control, is that they don't have to prove anything. This is what makes it such a beautiful business to be in. You know, for people who are treating it like business, like the evangelical churches, extremist groups, the government of Iran, and so on and so forth. It's a great business to be in because you don't have to prove anything.
You know, but we can learn, we can grow spiritually without getting hooked on an ism, you know?
Absolutely.
And we have the freedom to do so, and in the individual freedom to do so. You know, one of the things I like to do for my spiritual growth, Chiram, and many of you know this and many others know this, is the spiritual practice of kirtan, right?
Yes.
And there's no belief system in that. It's an exercise of expression where you can let go. You let go and feel the great wealth of the expanse of the moment, of the presence, which includes everything, includes everything, but it doesn't. But it's not anything in specific.
Voice is a great healer, and that's why kirtans work. However, it's not about what you say, contrary to what people tell you that.
Right.
Why I do have one problem with kirtan is that they do promote worshiping of deities. That's why. So if kirtans are taught mostly as just practices for breathing and for singing and for chanting, this is obviously fantastic, and people feel great every time that they do it. But if people get locked into deity worship because of the kirtans, that is going to be a trap for their evolution. Listen, right. through the life's soul's evolution, it is unavoidable for you to fall into the trap of being a slave. It is just part of the evolutionary process. But my point is that, to your listeners, is two words: wake up. You are no longer a slave. Stop worshiping deities. Focus on yourselves now. Now you have earned the privilege of being a deity yourself. Focus on yourselves. If you want to worship something, focus on worshiping yourself. That's where your next level of evolution is.
Now, let me play a little of the devil's advocate here.
Go for it.
Yeah. This could be considered at some point narcissism.
Well, listen. That is actually some of the comments. If you speak with a priest about this, they're going to come up with a list of why this is wrong. And what they are telling you is that you are a child, basically. You are not capable. You are not ready. You don't have the privilege. You haven't evolved to the level. Blah, 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 blah. It's not narcissistic. We are a lone spark on a journey that probably lasts millions of years. In this journey, we come across various other souls in different forms, in different, some physical, some spiritual, some in different different dimensions. We are always by ourselves. And the only way that we can evolve is to focus on who we are, is to first accept who we are, accept our limitations. You know, you cannot. You know, the love is obviously one of the major forces in the universe. However, the trick, the secret to love, is that first you must love yourself before you can learn how to love. The secret to respect is first you need to have self-respect before you can respect others. So the key to self-focus is not that we are, you know, so selfish or egotistical or anything like that. It is that this is the secret to growth. And out of self-knowledge, out of self, acceptance, which is really, really important self, because people typically don't accept themselves. People typically don't even love themselves. You know, they always want to escape from who they are. It is the discussion that we have, this is very high level soul evolution discussion. And
yes,
the soul needs to reach a certain level where it can actually look at itself and say, okay, I see and I spot my limitations and I accept all of them. And stop the hypocrisy of kind of living in some kind of a fake reality, escapism. So these aren't obviously not everyone is at a level where they can see the world in this way. But it, just that, just when they hear it, something shifts in them, and eventually they will be able to reach this level.
You know, this reminds me of the work of Andrew Cohen in a way. Are you familiar with him, right?
Yes, I am. I haven't actually read his work, but I am familiar with who he is.
Yeah, Ken Wilber?
I'm sorry.
That's all right. What you're saying in the theme here, is the soul growth of the individual, and to take responsibility. I mean, it's very, very strong with Andrew, and I hear that with you, and I feel that it's maybe the hardest type kind of path, one of the hardest kind of paths, because you got nothing to fall back on.
Yes. Well, you do, because the universe is always supporting you. Now, I'm not saying God is supporting you.
Let me just wait. Nothing apparent to fall back on.
Yeah, no, there's nothing apparent to fall back.
Yeah.
But the universe, the way the universe is set up is that it's set up for evolution, because evolution, as you know, is ongoing. Everything is evolving. When you talk about the physical manifestation of the universe, planets evolve, stars evolve. You know, they stars die. They actually have an age. Obviously, the species evolve. We've been on an evolutionary path for billions of years. So, universe is completely, I'm not sure what the best phrase to use, but the universe is made to allow evolution, and evolution doesn't stop just with our physical bodies. It also includes our souls, because our souls really drive these bodies, and we don't always have bodies, and sometimes we have experiences in different type of existence. It is a difficult conversation.
Yeah, I got to just do a station break.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, here it is.
From Bennington to Broad Albin and from Catskill to Corinth, we're everywhere. This is 91.5 WRPI Troy. 10,000 watts of pure alternative radio. This is 91.5 WRPI Troy.
And you're listening to WRPI Troy, the Upstate Underground. I am your host for Gary I'm your host, Gary Goldberg, for the program In the Spirit. Thanks for tuning in. And thank you all over, wherever you are, on WRPI.org and 91.5. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm very grateful that Sharam Shiva is joining us today. And Sharam, what I like to do on this program is to explore the tough subjects.
Yes.
And the whole point is to offer something that perhaps people are really thirsty for and maybe not don't even know it.
Yes. Yes. Well, actually, that yes, because if we don't know it, that's what makes it really interesting, because We're always open to new experiences. Most of us are anyway, and so this is a part of not knowing is what's known as the aha moment, you know, or a moment of epiphany. So that's if we can bring up some of that for your listeners, I think we have done a pretty good job. Let me give you an example, basically a metaphor for what we are talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
In a responsible society, when a child is born, a child is taken care of. And the way the child is taken care of is that its housing is or shelter is taken care of, its food is taken care of, the amount of love it receives, it's taken care of, protection and education, and fun and activities, and all that are taken care of when a child in a responsible society, responsible parents, obviously not our parents responsible, everything is taken care of. When this child relies on his parents for everything, for his existence, otherwise he will die.
Yes.
When this child grows and becomes an adult, it not only distances itself from its parents, yet it forms its own, in a sense, unit of protection for its own offspring. So he's no longer not only reliant on support, he is now the support maker for younger souls and spirits. This is exactly the process of soul evolution. When our souls are young, we are reliant on deities. We are reliant on universe. We are reliant on the voodoo. You know, that's a general term for basically snake oil of the spirituality. We're reliant on dogma. We're reliant on the carrot and stick, meaning being punished if you're bad and being rewarded if you're good. But when our souls reach adulthood, keep in mind, this has nothing to do with your body and the age of your body. This takes millions of years. When your soul has evolved to a stage of adulthood, you no longer need all that support. Now it's your turn to take care of younger souls.
Yes.
And that's what we are doing here.
Yes.
Today. And that's where my message is to those who I know have reached adulthood, and they may be stuck still in past patterns that they need to break out of.
Thank you. So why don't we take this another step into what practical things can people do to come out, get unstuck?
A lot of it is mental. You need a good mind. Unfortunately, the process of soul evolution cannot happen if your mind is not ready. You need a good mind. And the way you need a good mind is that you need to keep your mind active. Creative people will do much better than people who are not so creative. So make sure that you keep your mind healthy, meaning that try to read above your own level. Try to open, and so that's number one. Number two is keep yourself open. This is one of the biggest lessons. It's almost cliche, this number two lessons. You need to remain open.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get stuck. Don't become a fundamental. Don't become a fundamentalist. Don't become a yoga fundamentalist. Don't become a Mac user, Apple user fundamentalist. Throw away fundamentalism in any of its forms.
Mm-hmm.
Don't become a green environmentalist fundamentalist. Don't become a PETA, the PETA activist fundamentalist. You want to help animals, do it, but don't turn into a fundamentalism, because that is the greatest form of kind of anti-progression that you could tackle.
Which means a fundamentalism, in short, means exclusive exclusive concentration as to and leaving all out other things out.
Right, meaning living life with blinders on.
Mm.
Don't live your life with blinders on. Don't think that there's only one reality. There are multiple realities. There are various versions. Listen to other people.
Yeah.
Listen. See what they have to say. Listen to people you don't like. See what they have to say.
Yeah.
You know, not every day, you know, all the time, but keep yourself open. Remain open all the time, because once you become an extremist, and people, you know, we think of extremist at Islamic extremists only, and we think, okay, that's it. There are no other types. No, there are Christian extremists, or Jewish extremists, or Hindu extremists. There are people who use various, like, you know, there are Apple user extremists. I call them Mac Talibans, you know. they are people who get very extremist when it comes to yoga and spirituality and so forth, especially. So that's really a topic that we are discussing here. Evolve beyond extremism. Evolve beyond kind of a narrow vision of what somebody has taught you as being the reality. Because the reality really, truly, if you want to know, starts with you and ends with you. Leave your experiences open, and don't just give your soul away so easily to others.
Now, thank you. I'd like to, since you want to go back to Rumi, since you've got some expertise in that as well. Tell us how Rumi fits into this. His consciousness. You wouldn't call him a fundamentalist then.
No, I wouldn't call Rumi a fundamentalist. He's an anti-fundamentalist.
Yeah.
Rumi was. There are various things we need to consider here. The most important and the simplest is the fact that time is a major factor in all this, meaning that we could not have this conversation 100 years ago, because that level of wisdom, because the wisdom evolves. You know, everything evolves.
Right.
That level of wisdom wasn't available. And now that level, we are living in an environment where that level of wisdom is available. Rumi lived 800 years ago. In that time, basically what the highest level of thinking was tackling at 800 years ago was some basic philosophical questions and rather routine spiritual experiences. By that, I mean they had the concept of the basic Sufism, which is very, very limiting, by the way. All these isms are very limiting. There are their own traps. You need to be able to evolve beyond isms of all kinds, Hinduism, Sufism, mystical Christianity, all of that. You need to evolve beyond them. So they were stuck at that level. However, what they did was, especially since we're talking about Rumi tried his best to send out a message that was based on soul evolution 800 years ago in Middle East. Today, in certain countries like Saudi Arabia or Iran, you cannot say those things. Today, 800 years later. And I have one poem here from Rumi that I read for you before. I like to read it, where he's talking about soul evolution.
Okay.
And he is, you know, again, people may listen to it back then 800 years and have no clue what he's talking about.
Mm.
But the impact of it, you know, lingers until people can evolve to a point where they can appreciate the poem. So now we are at a level where a majority of your listeners will actually get this poem, especially the last part of it. Whereas our group of souls, you know, if we were around 800-900 years ago, we would have might have had a difficulty understanding it.
Yes.
So time is a major factor. This is called "I Have Come to Shine."
Yes.
I have come to take you by your hand and bring you to myself. I have come to shine your way as you walk this path. I will make you guiltless. I will make you fearless. Then I will place you in the brightest point in the universe. I have come like a breeze of spring to your field of flowers, so I can hold you by my side and embrace you tight. I have come to take you by your hand and bring you to myself. I have come to shine your way as you walk this path. Like the cry of lovers, I will help you reach the roof of heavens. From the dust of the earth to a human being, there are 1,000 steps. I have been with you through these steps. I have held your hand and walked by your side. And I will be with you as you move beyond this human form and soar to the highest heavens.
Thank you. I got a question about that.
Yeah.
Who is the voice there?
This is Rumi talking to us. And when he said he has been with us, that is to his soul cluster, the people that he is, the kind of a hierarchy that he is a part of.
Well, he's talking as a representative of universal consciousness.
Well, there are two ways to see it. I mean, because I'm very familiar with Rumi's personal life, and also I have a very deep spiritual connection with Rumi. I'm kind of part of his group, if I can say that. And there are two ways to look at this. One way is that he is talking to the people who are his spiritual kin. And the second thing is that, yes, you can definitely look at it. That is the universe talking to you. And I think that's how people should really look at it.
Yes, because we're a part. Is it safe to say we're a particle of God?
Well, God, there is no God. God is a man-made product.
Then we are a particle
of the universe.
Of divine creation.
Of divine, yes. Actually, divinity is also misleading because that's man's creation. Very, very tricky. Let me just say one thing.
Yeah.
There is a system of spiritual hierarchy that runs through the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And we are a part of. We are a part of the universal spiritual hierarchy. This hierarchy that may have like a million levels. We are at levels, very low levels. We are at very low levels. And we look at people who may be a level above us as gods, which is completely misleading, or as deities, because they are not.
Right.
They simply just happens to be superhumans.
Yeah.
Or many of them are just not from this planet. They're aliens who represented themselves to primitive cultures as gods.
I'm wondering. Go ahead.
When the white people went to the darkest points of Africa, they were worshipped as gods. Because they had superior weapons and they look different. This is how our God myth has been created. You know, it's not, it's the God that we worship is not the creator of the universe. It's just, first off, there's no...
By the way, people can go to Rumi.net, find out all about what Shyam is up to in his music. And sorry we didn't have a chance to play Love Drunk today. But we certainly will sometime soon. And Shyam, I want to thank you so much for being with us on In the Spirit, and best wishes for your gig in New York at the Open Center tomorrow with John Ragusa and Rob Sylvan and Alex Alexander.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's always great to be on your show.